You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Welcome back to the Best Practices Show. My name is Kirk Barrett, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best practices, best thinkers all over. And I have a huge treat for you today because I haven't even really met this guy, Dr. Travis Campbell. And I had heard about this book called Understanding Dental Insurance. And I saw it once, then I saw it twice. Then I heard some people talking about it. Then I saw it again. And I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to get it. And I got it. And it's fantastic. I'm going to highly recommend that you get it also. And I'm going to explain a little bit about that and why in just a second, because I get to see a lot of stuff. This book describes it better than most any book I've read in dentistry. And it is an awesome resource. I don't care if you're a fee-for-service dentist. It's probably a good book to get. But I want to introduce my guest, Travis. You and I have just met for the first time. You are so kind to respond to my emails. And you're like, all right, yeah, we'll do it. So I always love to start here. Like, tell us your story. I want to know who you are, you know. Where do you practice? And how did you get started in all this?
Okay. Let's see. I graduated back in 2009 from Baylor, okay. Which is now A&M. So mm-hmm. That's always an interesting story. But I did a startup scratch practice immediately afterwards, and everything from there. And this is kind of the topic of my first book, but I screwed up a lot. I mean, pretty much I tell people all the time, if you can screw up something in an office, I screwed it up. So that was basically what I wrote the first book, is what I learned from all the mistakes I made. And then from there, it was, we're not taught much about business, communication, insurance, and dental school. Mm-hmm. We're usually taught pretty well how to do dentistry. But I don't know about you, in my experience, that's the easy part of life, yeah, as being a dentist. And so I started trying to look for information, and I couldn't find any. I mean, there is nothing on dental insurance, at least at the level that I think most of it need it. Yeah. And so this book was kind of a personal exploration, research, and trying to find answers to things that I couldn't find.
Yeah.
And so, during COVID, when we were all shut down and doing nothing, I was still going to the office because that was the only way I could stay sane. And I wrote the book.
Okay. Now I got to ask this. I mean, you're an excellent writer. Was writing a native passion of yours? So tell me, or was it kind of like a positive distraction for you?
If you had asked me 5 years ago if I would have ever written a book, I would have told you, heck no. Mm-hmm. If you'd asked me 10 years ago if I would ever do public speaking, I'd give you the same, probably more vehement response. The writing, it almost came naturally because I like being helpful, like a lot of dentists.
Right.
And I got a lot of people asking me questions on, how do you make your office run, or how do you do this with insurance? And so a majority of what I write is just answers to people's questions.
Yeah.
And making it simple. I mean, to me, you can take these complex issues and they're only complex because of how we usually try to think about them or how we usually try to describe them versus just breaking it down into English and going, this is all it is. Mm-hmm. And so a majority of really both books is information that I've given to people over the years and then just put into a bigger picture.
Yeah.
Now I will say I have a really good editor that I've been working with a long time that's kind of helped bring some of it a little cleaner. But I don't know, I can tell you I don't feel like I'm the best writer in the world. I think she has some of that, but I guess I've had a lot of people tell me I just make things sound easy.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely. And so if you're listening and you're a dentist, I don't care, like I said in the intro, I don't care if you're a fee-for-service dentist. I don't care if you're 100% PPO. This is a fantastic resource because, I mean, I could actually interview you on every single chapter here. But even describing the purpose of insurance and the different kinds of insurance and what it means, you know, even how to look at your agreements, and then can you take me through a little bit of your research in this? Like, so, and I've got to ask you, so did you start, you said, you know, scratch start, did you start on insurance and then are you fee for service? I don't know the answers to these questions. That's why I'm asking you.
So when I started the practice from scratch 12 years ago, I signed up with every insurance under the sun, just okay. Like most people do. If there's a contract that exists, I have my initial or my signature on it. Over the next 6 years or so, I started dropping insurance, like a lot of us do, you know, one at a time and becoming more out of network. And I was down to two insurance companies. That was a majority of the insurance patients we had. And then 3 years ago, I decided to flip and we went back in network with everybody.
Why?
I get asked that question all the time because everybody thinks being out of network is the best way to make money. And I will say it's probably easier that way. But what I've noticed is there's a lot of patients in the world that will only go see an in-network dentist, period. Mm-hmm. They're brainwashed or that's the mentality or it's financial, whatever the reason. There's a lot of people that will never step foot in a fee-for-service office or an out-of-network office. That's right. Just what they are. And I wanted to help them. I mean, that was a majority of it.
Yeah.
But it's also, if we understand how insurance works, the amount of write-offs we have to take are so far less than what we think. When we went back in network, most of my fee structure now is 15 or 20% discount when it used to be 35, 40, 50. Well, if you think about, we also have plans for our cash patients, membership plans, where they get a 10 or 15% discount naturally. Mm-hmm. So for me to give 10 or 15% to a cash patient or 15 or 20% to an insurance patient is not a big difference.
Right.
And so I can treat everybody pretty close to the same fees in network. So why not?
Yeah. And can I just
ask, our collections went up by 700,000 last year.
Wow. Okay. So I don't know the, so how big is your practice? How many patients are you talking about in your practice?
2,500. Okay. Active.
All right.
I'd say we probably have another 1,000 that would consider me their dentist, but they only ever go to the dentist every 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Okay.
For emergencies and whatnot. But if you ask them who's your dentist, I would probably be on their mind. They just don't come see hygiene. So yeah. It is. Yeah.
So now you're blowing my mind on this because you've had quite the journey. What do you think most people get wrong with understanding this? I mean, there's probably a lot of different segments of this, but what, when you talk to other dentists, what do they most get wrong?
When it comes to insurance or practice?
Well, let's do both of them. Let's do insurance and practice. Why not?
So the number one thing I would say I learned in myself was we're taught well on clinical. And when I first got out, the CE courses I took we're mostly clinical. Mm-hmm. They're the fun stuff. They're the ones we want to learn more. But I realized after spending a fortune on some high-end clinical classes on TMJ therapies and CAD-CAM and a lot of other things, it doesn't matter what we know if we can't communicate with the patient well enough to get them to want to purchase
right.
what we can do. And when I started learning more about communications with patients, that opened up everything else.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if, you know, we're the best clinician in the world to do an implant or high-end surgeries or whatever, because if we can't get the patients to say, yes, I'm willing to drop X amount of money to have you do this thing that will change my life, yeah. it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's the number one thing. And I've been a business coach for quite a few dentists, and one of the biggest challenges I see most offices that are struggling financially is treatment acceptance.
Right.
And dentists have like average of 25 or 30%. And it boggles my mind because I'm like, you know, we always want new patients, but we have all these patients that aren't getting treated in the first place.
Yeah.
And if we can just have higher treatment acceptance, we don't need new people.
For sure.
We could drop insurance plans. We can do a whole lot if we have the ability to take care of the people that are in front of us already.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Then what do you, let's go back to the insurance piece of it. What part do most get wrong about the PPO or insurance game?
Listening to the myths. There's so many myths in the industry.
Right.
Feeling like you have to file every claim regardless. It's one of them. Insurance companies don't want to see claims that they're not going to pay for. It's a burden to them as well. And yet I see it all the time, and it hinders what we do. Because insurance companies, for instance, if you do services that are non-covered, their software doesn't know how to deal with that. And so while the law may state you can bill your full fee, the EOB software can't handle that.
Right.
It's not designed to. And so you end up with a whole lot of challenges with getting things going, and it doesn't work.
Right.
So instead, if you just go, look, just don't use insurance at all, then you can do what the patient needs for the price that you two come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Another example is the term fraud is thrown around a whole lot with people who don't understand what the term fraud means, which is fun. So fraud is purely communications. Again, the definition of fraud is lying to an insurance company in order to make money.
Right.
That's the most simple definition of it. And if you want to look at it, every state has this as insurance fraud. But that's pretty simple, as it means whatever you communicate to the insurance company needs to be true. Mm-hmm. And as long as that's the case, almost everything else is not fraud, even though everybody's like, well, this is fraud and that's fraud, because they don't understand what's possible. As an example, if you wanted to provide an upgraded service to a patient that is more cost than what your in-network fees are, you can do that as an option. It's in your contract, not only that you can, but how to do it. And yet, none of us read contracts. I didn't until recently. And that's the thing, is there's this myth going around that you can't charge more as an option to patients that choose to accept it
yeah.
because you're in-network. And that's just not the case. And so learning these things has opened up the world of everything that we can do for patients.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of them accept upgrades. Most of them do, though. Because if you can, again, communicate with them the value of the different service, in many cases, the patients actually want the better care.
Yeah. And one of the things, so you talk about the myths, you know, in reading your book, I'm loving it because you're going right into the eye of the hurricane. Like, even in, do insurance companies not pay claims? The thing I appreciate about it is it's not an emotional, you're not taking an emotional side. It's a very clean approach to, you know, dentists have said that when you get a piece of literature like this, it's emotionally charged. Do you know what I mean? Yours is not. You're like, that's silly, because they're under intense scrutiny all the time on these items. It would be silly for them. You said it better than I would in this, but you're dispelling a lot of the things that dentists tell themselves about certain insurances. in that. So again, I'm just going to encourage you, if you're a listener, you got to read it. So what are some other myths that we tend to tell ourselves about this in dentistry?
So the one that's probably the most detrimental to what we do on a day-to-day basis kind of goes into what you just talked about, is there's this rumor that, you know, most rumors have some shred of truth to them, that you have reviewers on the insurance company side that are sitting there going, pay this claim, don't pay this claim, pay this claim, don't pay this claim, without even looking at them. They just kind of shove them into a deny pile. The challenge with that is, for one, is there one or two reviewers that do that? Probably. I mean, there's humans everywhere. Humans screw up. But on a system-wide basis, like on an insurance company-wide basis, they can't have that happen. Because again, there is that scrutiny from the State Department of Insurance that's always looking over their shoulder, just like the state board's always looking over our shoulders. Mm-hmm. So they can't have policies that recommend that. They only have people that kind of screw up within the company themselves. Well, the challenge with this is, if you want to have that opinion, great. But the challenge is, the dentists have that opinion, and then when they get denied, they blame the insurance company or the reviewer, as opposed to looking at their own claims and going, was this denied because I didn't provide enough information?
Right.
And that's the biggest thing, is if we can't look at ourselves and find the potential faults that we created, then we can never improve ourselves.
Right.
And so I get claims all the time, usually for like scaling and root planing or crowns, where a dentist goes, look, we submitted everything we should have and we got denied. And I look at the claim and go, well, you know, I can see why you did what you did. I'm not disagreeing as a dentist, but you've got to realize you don't check off all the boxes here that the insurance company is needing to say yes or no to reimbursement.
Yeah.
And in most cases, it's because over the years, the onus on the dentist has increased, but we have not kept up with that.
Right.
So for example, scaling and root planing. The number one thing I see is that you've got pocket depths and nothing else. Well, if most of us go back to our original training with Perio, it's we need pocket depths and gingival margins and clinical attachment loss and bleeding out probing and furcation involvement and everything. And yet what we're sending out on claims a lot of times that get denied are pocket depths only. I'm like, well, yeah, of course the insurance company denied you because they don't have even the basic level of information that you need to provide to even claim this patient has perio disease in the first place.
Yeah.
Again, I don't disagree with the pocket depths show that, yes, it's a possibility, but you don't have enough information in there to prove it.
Right.
And that's the thing. So it's just, in most cases, it's provide more information. And when you do that, you take what traditionally is something that's denied 30, 40, 50% of the time and make it denied less than 1%.
Right.
Which is what our experience is.
Yeah.
We don't have scaling root planing claims denied. We don't have crown claims denied. But we also provide the level of information they're looking for.
Yeah. And I love this because you actually give examples of too much documentation, too little, and kind of the sweet spot in there, which I've never seen anybody do that before. So it's really well done in that respect. Now, I want to go back to something you said is, you know, it's true. A lot of dentists have not kept up their game. And basically, that's the essence of your journey, probably, is you did this. Then you went back after being out of network. And now take us a little bit further into that. When you signed up a second time, you probably went it with a better, you know, a better set of lenses as far as how I'm going to do this with better reimbursement. Is that pretty accurate? You know?
Sorry, I got distracted.
No, that's all right. That's all right. No sweat.
Ask the question again. Sorry.
So when you went back into signing up, you said going back into network, you just said, hey, listen, I'm going to sit down, read these agreements. I'm going to understand what I'm getting into. And you were kind of writing the narrative for how you were going to do that, correct? The second time around or not?
In a way. So everybody thinks about negotiations, right? Meaning I want something, you want something, and we compromise somewhere in between. That almost doesn't happen anymore. That's the way insurance used to run. Mm-hmm. That's not the way it runs now.
Yeah.
The way it runs now is the insurance companies have enough dentists and network that they don't care. So it's the take it or leave it, because I've got 10 other dentists on the phone who are going to take it.
Right.
So I don't, it doesn't matter to us whether you want a higher fee, we're not going to give it to you. But instead, it's, there are dozens and dozens of insurance companies out there, and a lot of them are lazy or efficient or whatever term you want to use, in that it takes a lot of effort to sign up a dentist, time, manpower, money to do that. And so insurance companies will start to lease this information from other insurance companies, meaning I can sign up with one insurance company that has a higher fee schedule and less restrictions, and then I will automatically get assigned to the other insurance companies I want that may have a lower fee schedule, but because I didn't sign directly with them, I maintain my high fee schedule. And so it's about affiliations more than it is negotiations. It's knowing which ones to sign up with so that you get the higher fees, instead of this back and forth of, well, you gave me 100, I want 120, where are we gonna go from there?
Right, right. Yeah, and you're exactly right, because that's the way it was. You could negotiate, and now you can't. And then they started limiting to, well, only the biggies won't negotiate. Now none of them negotiate. Is that what you're saying, for the most part?
Most of them. You can somewhat get some negotiations from some if you've got certain things that come up. Like if you're rural and they don't have enough dentists in that area, sure, they'll negotiate.
Right.
If they see data that you treat more patients than three or four offices nearby and you're about to drop, well, yeah, they're going to run the numbers. It's purely a math game for them. That's all an insurance company is. Mm-hmm. But if you're an average dentist, they're not going to negotiate. You don't have the leverage to change that.
Yeah.
But what you can do is sign up with a different company, say Carrington's a well-known one, that they have a higher fee schedule. And therefore you sign up with them, and then you get automatically included into other networks through these affiliations, and you're in the insurance companies that you want, but not at their low fees. You're at the higher fee structure. So it's negotiating that, and negotiating is probably a bad word on this end, it's navigating that minefield of which insurance companies do you want to sign up with in order to get those higher fees. And that's what true negotiation companies do now, is keep track of all of that data and go, what's the most strategic way to get a network? Mm-hmm. And that makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And even the word shared agreement comes up. It just puts everybody into a frenzy, because they naturally mm-hmm. think, I'm going to be on these other plans at a lower fee. So it's refreshing.
You can turn around.
Yeah.
Turn around and pick the higher fee and utilize what a lot of people complain about for your benefit.
Yeah,
because the complaint always is, if you're trying to get out of network and you drop one company, but you're with another, and therefore you get backdoored back into the company you just left, well, that's a huge challenge.
Right.
But if you utilize it instead to get in network with the ones you want at a higher fee, then you can take what's traditionally seen as a negative and turn it into a positive.
Yeah. And again, I think the resource, the education you're providing is fantastic. We're going to talk about your online platform. But I also want you to speak to, we have a lot of younger students listening, a lot of dental students. And so a lot of times they say, oh, I'm talking to this dentist who's a premier provider. And they need to know a lot more about, no, well, that dentist may be, but that doesn't necessarily mean you will be. What would you say to the younger dentists listening, like, couple things you want to do when you get out in the world being a dentist? You know, do your homework on this, this, and this. What would you say, Travis?
Absolutely need to learn coding. I mean, that's your communication with the insurance company. It's your communication with the office of what was done. And in a lot of ways, it can make a huge difference on your income. Because, example, if you file for an exam, there's multiple different exams. You could do the same exact work, but file the exam correctly and actually get paid 20, 30, 40% more. You know, there's comp exams, but there's comp perio exams. A lot of people don't know the difference between the two. The difference between the two is purely a comp exam on a patient with perio disease. And yet there's a higher fee structure for that. And that code is so underutilized in the industry. And it can make a difference. So the coding is a huge portion of it, is just learn it. And it's not super difficult. You just have to look into it. because it's something that's there's not taught in schools, because schools don't have to deal with insurance because they rarely file claims. The other one, like we talked about already, is communications. I mean, I love Paul Hamilly's books. Well, he's got lots of stuff. He's got books. He's got CE courses. He's got everything. But his way of describing stuff is great for getting patients to understand what's going on. And he's probably one of the top people I learned from originally on how to communicate with patients. So it's that thing of, you know, when we first get out of dental school, a lot of our focus, because I still remember this, even though it was 12 years ago, a lot of our focus is trying to do a prep right, trying to get speed, trying to do the dentistry, and then sitting on our hands because we're not very busy. Versus if we learn how to communicate better, we get busier faster, we learn the clinical faster, and we also make more money along the way and pay off our loans faster. So it's learning what it is that's going to make us successful often is not the clinical side.
Right.
Patients, I mean, we hear it all the time, but I don't think we internalize it. Patients cannot appreciate good dentistry or bad dentistry. They don't have a way to really distinguish between one or the other. But what they do appreciate is how they feel when they leave the office.
Yeah,
totally. You know, did you hurt them? Did you listen to them? Did you answer their questions? Did they leave confused or did they leave with clarity?
Yeah.
And that makes a huge difference.
It does. It does. It's funny you mentioned Paul. I took a speaking course years ago and it was a 2-day course and he worked us to death. And then he said to me, he said to everybody in class, he's like, listen, I'm just going to tell you guys, your ability to communicate will determine how far you go in dentistry, period. And he said it over and over and over again. And I was like, wow. Like, and it's true. I mean, you can only do so much with your hands. You've got to be able to communicate with human beings. And this is a key piece to it. And I'm so curious. I still have a million questions for you. You know, so you made this pivot and you're obviously a very sharp guy. Is there a considerable part of your practice that's still fee for service? Or you're like, no, or like, what would you say? I mean, add some perspective on that.
I'd say we're probably 85% in network.
Okay.
So okay. Majority, you know, I do have some patients that are cash patients, but usually they're the older patients that are no longer working and therefore insurance straight out of pocket, right, not through an employer, often doesn't make sense. So a majority of our patients are in network. Where are you going with that question, though?
Well, I was just curious because, like, you're making a very unusual pivot, and I love it because you're educating. Now, I'll tell you exactly where I'm going. So a lot of times people can't follow me anyway, but, like, I got you covered here. You know, the argument, I've been doing this for a long time, so as you can imagine, the insurance game is very complex. What you said is spot on. Dentists don't up their game because there's not a lot of places where you can get great education and you're offering it in a great book, but you know, you don't get regular courses in your town on how to do this the right way where dentists are like, I got to go to this. I got to learn my upgrade. And then they would always complain for years that somebody in your office is working for the insurance company, but you pay their salary. You've heard all this before. You know what I mean? And it's just easier just to put your head in the sand and be angry about it. Long term. But I would say where I'm going with this is you're filling a huge need here because there isn't, my argument would be there's not a ton of really awesome education. I told you before we went live, I read a lot of this stuff. And a lot of it, I start reading, I'm like, oh gosh, I don't even know if I can finish this. Do you know what I mean? This one, I cannot put down. It is excellent, like very well written, very clean, very clear. So I guess my point is this, is that, you know, the education piece, which you're providing here, you have options. You've probably got a good 2-3 decades of practice and you could at any point change your mind again, like you already have in the future if the rules change. So I don't even know if there's a question in there, but here's my real question. What's on the horizon for you? I want to know what your third book is going to be. So like, I know you're already scheming something. What's your next thought? What does it look like for you in the future in the next 3 years?
So I went part-time 4 months ago.
Okay.
I hired an associate who's awesome, and he takes 2 days a week. I take 2 days a week. So the office is still a one dentist office. And I take that time to create CE courses and training modules and information and do all the research necessary to kind of get all this together. So this year, I've got four conferences. You mentioned there's not a lot of training. I've got four conferences throughout the country training people how to deal with insurance. I've got a training platform that's coming out, and actually probably by the time this podcast releases will be out, that is a membership program that $30 a month, and it will have everything you need. It'll have online CE courses. It will have forms to use. It will have an updated list of all the state legislation for non-covered services and what to do about them, which doesn't exist yet.
Right.
I will be doing monthly Q&A sessions to answer anything that team members or dentists want. On and on and on. I could list a million things that that site's going to have, but it's fun because it is my ability to go out to dentists and go, look, this is what I know, at least for me, was the number one biggest frustration at running an office was how to get paid. And I'm trying to break it down to make it as simple as possible so everyone can do better.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. So by the time this airs, I mean, we're going to put all of it in the show notes. Where can people go to get this information? Like how could I learn more? And you're right. Those resources don't exist anywhere. So Where are you putting all this?
TheDentalInsuranceGuy.com.
I love it. I love it. And so I'm going to encourage you guys to check it out. And now go back to this. So you're going to do four workshops or four bit. Mm-hmm. So do you break it down in different segments? Are they the same workshop or are they different workshops?
No, they're all different. So I've got one coming up next week, which will be before this show airs. That's the business of dentistry. Okay. And so we're talking about legal and risk management. We're talking about insurance. We're talking about how to run a practice. Mm-hmm. And that's in Houston. I've got another one in Atlanta on medical and dental insurance and profitability. Because as far as I know, nobody's ever done a component with medical and dental combined. I've got one in July that is just on practice management. And I mean, obviously my part's always insurance on these things. Yeah. And then how to make a better office. And I've got one at the end of the year that's actually an interesting one. We're planning on to have a conference, almost like a debate, on fee-for-service versus PPO.
Ooh, I want to come to that one. Can you save me? I actually want to come to all of them. Can you save me a seat on that one? So,
sure.
So there's two things you mentioned. I want to ask you about the fee-for-service versus insurance, but I also want you to share the opportunity because I don't think anyone's done medical and dental. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of people don't understand the opportunity in medical insurance. Can you share what your learning has been on the medical insurance side of things?
So I'm still newer at the medical, which is why I'm partnering with somebody who that's what she does all the time is medical. Right. But it's been a really interesting experience because, yeah, I used to, and we tried medical years ago and weren't successful with it, mostly because of deductibles, but also because we didn't understand necessarily all the ins and outs of how to file it. And a lot of it is because medical works different than dental. So dental is a lot about the evidence. Show an x-ray, show a photo. Narratives are somewhat important, but not super important. Medical is the exact opposite. Medical is all about the story, and the story is in the coding. So whereas in dental, you've got one code for one service, and that is what it is. In medical, you've got a code and then multiple modifier codes, and those modifier codes each tell a part of the story. Mm-hmm. So for instance, if you fall and hit your head on a toilet and break a tooth and need the tooth replaced, well, you go into the coding, and medical, it's replace tooth because you broke it, because your head hit a toilet. And oddly enough, there's usually a modifier code pretty close to that because they've got modifiers for everything, because a slip and fall. And those are the modifier codes. So they work backwards. And if you understand that, you can get things like implants paid for by medical. The thing that often dental doesn't pay for either at all, or you max out so quickly, dental becomes useless. So implants, wisdom teeth, bone grafts, sedation, or any traumas. All of these are covered under medical policies. Yeah. And one of the interesting things is, one of the complaints that comes up a lot is for people who do wisdom teeth on a regular basis, a lot of times you have to submit to medical before you submit to dental. It's just the way the policy is written. Well, this is because they're run by the same company and they were purchased through the employer under the same package. And so what happens is a lot of these policies, like why implants are not covered under dental, it's because they're covered under medical. Mm-hmm. And the insurance company does this because the employer says, I want implant coverage. And the insurance company says, great, we can do it, but not under the budget you want for your dental, but we can throw it into medical. Well, it's because the insurance company knows that most dentists don't know how to file medical. So if they throw it into medical, they'll probably never have to pay for it. But what will happen is, because it's already in medical, if you file under medical, you'll get coverage because it's there. So most often when you see policies that certain things aren't covered, which is weird, like wisdom teeth or implants, it's because, not because there's not coverage for that employer's policy, it's just moved to the medical policy. And so it's really interesting on how this works on a bigger picture. And by understanding it, you can actually learn to file the medical and get coverage for these services that the patient does have coverage for.
Yeah, it's a tremendous opportunity. So I want to go to that one too. Now go back to the fee-for-service, insurance one. So tell me what your vision is for that. And will you have a pretty balanced approach or debate and, you know, on both sides?
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got a fee-for-service dentist that's going to be kind of debating this back and forth with me that I talk to a decent amount, and he's fun. And it's going to be kind of like the challenges side of, you know, he's going to talk about why he went fee for service, what his process was, how he made it work. And I'm going to talk about the PPO side and the process and why I did it and why it works. And so therefore people can get both pros and cons and find out what works best for them. I don't tell people, and this is the funny part, I get sometimes the reputation that I want people to go in-network. No, I just want people to make insurance work for them, whether they're in-network, fee-for-service, or out-of-network, it doesn't matter. So it's just learning to use it correctly,
yeah,
which can make a big difference. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting debate, and it's purely designed to teach people what they need to learn to make either one successful.
Yeah. Now, again, this is the first time I've met you, and I would tell you that's probably the thing I appreciate about you the most is, like, this book is, you're not trying to slant anyone to your thinking. Mm-hmm. You're just educating them, and you can choose however you want to practice. That's why you guys got to read. It's truly, I mean, you're just doing a great job of educating people in a really, and you say things less. That's what I like. It's not 32 pages. It's two paragraphs and bam, mm-hmm. You don't even need to add another word. So it's extremely well done. I have to ask, what's your third book going to be? Do you have one
book planned? No, if you had asked me what in 2019, if I would write a second book, I would have told you no. So yeah. I don't know. It depends. Writing a book is an interesting phenomenon because it takes a ton of effort that I would never have thought of before I wrote it. But you learn so much along the way. Partially learn because you're trying to research to make a good book, but at the same time, you also learn a lot about yourself too.
Right.
And it's just one of those things, like, I can't describe it well unless somebody's actually written a book before, but it's a very unique soul-searching kind of process. I don't have a plan for another one. If I would do another one, it would probably be more like a workbook than it would an actual textbook again. And it would be designed around things that the textbook currently can't deal with because they change all the time.
Yeah.
So something like a update every couple of years of, you know, what's new in the industry, what changes are happening, what's the new trends, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, until number three comes out, I'm going to encourage you guys to read the first two. And again, I haven't read the first one, but I'm telling you, guys, I'm really enjoying Understanding Dental Insurance, A Guide for Dentists and Their Teams, Dr. Travis Campbell. I'm so grateful you wrote this, and I can't wait to see what you're up to next. Any last thoughts you have just on understanding dental insurance, or last few words you might add?
The biggest part is getting it to the point that insurance is less of a nightmare and more of an annoyance. I mean, I can't ever tell people it's not an annoyance. I mean, it is what it is. But when you understand it, I stopped beating my head against the wall with insurance and just started realizing, okay, if I can tweak one or two little things that I'm doing, I save my team vast amounts of time and we're a lot more productive. And that is how we have the patient numbers we have, how the collection numbers we have. We do a lot in the office, but it's because of little things. I mean, it's the little things we do every day that add up to make a massive difference.
Yeah.
And that's why it's interesting. I get people all the time going, how do you produce the numbers you produce being a network? I'm like, well, it's not one thing. It's all the steps we take in combination. And that's what I would say for anybody trying to improve their office, is it's not, there is no magic bullet. I mean, insurance is a big one. I mean, it's, you know, a howitzer instead of a little pistol, but it's still not the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's every little step we make. So the way to improve an office is one step at a time.
Yeah. It's awesome. Very well said. Well, thank you for being on today, buddy. I really appreciate this. And, I'd love to do a follow-up too. Get find out more about what you're up to. You guys got to check out his website. We'll put the links in there. Now, we're obviously shooting this before it's gone live, but our post-production team will put it in the show notes. So you guys can just flip up to the show notes and we'll put links in there and you can check it out. But make sure you get his book for sure, Travis. So Travis, thanks for being on today, buddy. Hope you enjoyed it. Stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. But thank you guys for joining in the Best Practices Show. Hope you enjoyed it. If you do us a favor and just share this with your friends, because this will help your friends. I guarantee you it's good stuff. And until we see you guys next time, keep watching or keep listening to the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. There you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.